Welcome to the Motoring Podcast, your weekly discussion of motoring news. This is episode 98 on Wednesday, the 29th of March, 2017. Hello, I'm Alan.
Hello, I'm Andrew. And this week, I learn how to say raided in German. Renault are accused of long-term deception. You get a reminder to vote. There is the Lazarus style, is Lazarus, Xenos style. Uber gets even more press, wonderful press, and there is much more. So I will kick off straight into follow-up of the raided on Audi raids. So apparently, how I'm supposed to pronounce this in German is I say Razzia. So Audi was Razziered.
Oh, well, that went really well. Good
start, so smooth. Yeah. Yes. And see, then we get the chance to offend so many countries at once. Effectively, what happened was that on the day of Audi's annual press conference, they were raided by German prosecutors in Ingolstadt and Neckarsulm.
Neckarsulm.
Yes, sorry. I apologize to anyone who can speak German.
And seven other as yet unnamed production sites. Yes.
Yes. Audi obviously stated that how they were helping prosecutors, etc., etc. But it must have been a bit embarrassing as the raid started a few hours before the press conference did. Not the best of news for them. So we shall have to see where this goes, because the German press have been saying for some time that Audi are the lot that have been orchestrated and started the whole Dieselgate thing. It was Audi engineers, apparently, or that is who is being accused of coming up with the idea and executing on it. So,
Of course, all this follows on from the former head of engine development, Ulrich Weiss, who has stated and accused Rupert Stadler, the CEO, of knowledge of Dieselgate from way, way back. So, we'll see how it goes.
Yeah, he did that in a... We were talking about this, weren't we? There was an employment tribunal because he was fed up of being sent on gardening leave or whatever it was. And he got fired whilst he was in court. So... That made then an unfair dismissal claim, I presume.
I would imagine that's somewhere down there. Anyway, Volkswagen. There was a little bit more from the Volkswagen point of view.
Yes, Bertel Schmidt's got, who we've referred to quite a few times on this show, has an interesting take on, basically that was part of Volkswagen's week from hell, really. Or the group's week from hell as far as information on Dieselgate and how it's gone badly in the press. So he, because this in America also there was discussions about the chap who's been refused bail, who was arrested in Florida, whose name I can't remember. He was heading up the American side of things. Yeah, so he was refused bail. Oh, sorry, I'm just trying to find the name now.
I don't have that one. That's the one story around this that I don't have open. Sorry.
When I find it, I'll put it in the show notes anyway, the chap's name. Yeah. But there's a lot in this article. So if anybody's interested in, well, it sounds almost fictional, some of the intricacies and nastiness. But there's talk about how the Jones Day American law firm has only passed on the information to the US Justice Department with the backing of the VW board, et cetera, et cetera. So it's all quite sordid again.
Yeah, there's a sort of whole load of mix up and the sort of the word I've got down here is embroilment between Volkswagen and the prosecutors and the lawyers and all sorts of stuff. And it's one of these pieces of really quite research journalism. So it's well worth a read. That's the reason we're mentioning it, is just to say we'll have a link in the show notes. And it's a fantastic read in there.
Yes. Right. Moving on. More follow-up. Still not good news, though.
No, still not good news. And I promise that this is pretty much the last of the bad news for this week. We're quite chirpy after this. The French Consumer Protection board, government department, the DGCCRF, is accused by, it has been reported by Libération French newspaper that Renault has been accused of cheating on emissions tests for the past 25 years. Okay, so we think
25
years. And it is very likely that the executive boards, right up to the very top level, have been aware as well. And as I say, this is according to Libération. They're saying that much of this, certainly recently, revolves around the Renault Captur small SUV and the Mark IV Clio. And they're saying that in real life use, they actually put out up to 300% more nitrogen oxide emissions than they do under the lab testing regime. Which I'm not sure whether that says a lot about the lab testing or it says a lot
about... Yeah, it's always the problem, isn't it, when they mention real world. Real world and lab testing, everybody's very clear, including the manufacturers, that they are two very distinct and different things, which whenever someone mentions real world as part of their justification or their evidence, I sort of go, but you're not doing apples for apples, you're doing apples for pears.
I agree. And in actual fact, there was an article published on one of the British Motoring Magazine websites over the weekend where they were saying that Volkswagen really should publish real world results. And it was just like, but I think I actually used the podcast account to reply to the tweet about it. And I just said, but surely surely real world is real world. And the first thing everyone's going to do is go out and normalize the results, which in turn means that really it's not real world at all. It is just a new test. And is it an official test or not an official test? And is everybody... I couldn't go into this much in 140 characters. But, you know, when there's a new real-world test, is it going to be real-world or is it going to be a test? Because there's a difference. And I think the two are mutually exclusive.
Well, that's it. I mean, Citroën or PSA have come out and said how they are going to... or they have started to produce the information of real-world results. But again... as you've said, you have to have some sort of consistency, otherwise you can't judge anything. So therefore, at that point, it's not real world. I think what they're trying to say is in more realistic conditions or driving styles or something like that, to be closer to what people actually get when they get inside their car and drive it. It's a bit more representative because at the minute, we can get such wildly different...
Well,
differing results, can't we?
Well, take a look at if you had a car for a week, and I had a car for a week. I've just had this wonderful idea, and I had a car for a week, right? And you used it for the driving that you do during the week, okay? Which is far more short journeys, a bit more stop start traffic than me. And if I had it for a week, and I'm doing you to Heathrow. Sit for a couple of days, you back from Heathrow. I'm doing, the car's always warm. You know, it always gets warmed up. It always gets warmed through. I'm mostly doing cruise miles. Which one's real world? They're going to be vastly, vastly different.
Mm. Yeah, no, it's true.
Not through any fault of either of us or trying to.
No, it's just we have different requirements at different times.
Totally. Anyway, by the way, Renault, just to finish off the story that I went off on a tangent about, Renault absolutely deny the claims, of course.
Mm, yeah. That's but, really, you know, that is after they were raided, wasn't it? So, and again, we return to if a French government agency is saying a French car company is not being wholly honest.
Vu ta loss, c'est énorme.
Yes, quite. Right, next bit of follow-up, but this is more of a reminder. We did talk about, because it was, I think it was a list of the week, Autocar Readers' Champion Award.
That's not Readers' Wives Award, that's Readers' Champion Award.
There was a list of 39 cars, of which people are to select. It closes this week, so it's a reminder. Please do go and vote. Whether you think the Aerial Nomad or the 64 Mustang or the McLaren F1 or even the original Golf GTI,
or the Renault Espace, or the Lancia Lambda, or the original Willys Jeep, or the Austin 7, to take a small selection.
It's which one has changed the world of motoring, or changed the world the most, in your opinion? And I think it's a great list, and I think it's interesting because all of them do grab you, but obviously for different reasons. So I think it was an excellent list that they put together, as we probably discussed at the time. I can't remember now. I've slept since then.
Like a long time ago.
But do go vote. And we get to find out, I think it's the 23rd of May, when Autocar have their event with, I think Talk Radio are going to be doing a 3-hour special on that as well. So that'll be good to hear some more car stuff audio-wise.
It's at Silverstone, and it's the Autocar Awards, of course.
Yep. So another bit of good news, though, Alan.
Is it good news or not? Some people have said it is, and some people have said it isn't. But Xenos, which we talked about a couple of weeks ago, we had talked about how it was going into receivership, but it has now been bought by AC Cars and the investors behind AC Cars. The chief amongst them is a chap called Alan Lubinsky, who is somewhat controversial. But AC Cars are saying they're going to keep on building Xenos in Norfolk for the time being, but they will probably look for cost reduction and to combine manufacture with AC, which sounds fantastic until you remember that AC Cars are kind of mostly sort of built in South Africa. So what it will probably mean is that Xenos, like AC, really ceases to be a British manufacturer. And it's going to all move overseas. Nobody knows, by the way, just how much was paid for Xenos.
New. Okay. Right. New news.
Whee.
It's new because it's been a while since we've done this. But Toyota announced a £240 million investment in their Burniston factory, which will bring it in line with the rest of their global production standards, which means they can take the global architecture platform, the TNGA.
Toyota New Global Architecture.
Yes. Which means they could potentially build any of the vehicles in the Toyota range that are on that. So it's great news for Burniston. It's good to see that they're being supported and that they will be brought in line, because what it indicates is that Toyota are not going to be leaving straight away, if they leave at all, following the Brexit. But equally, this was a decision that was clearly made years ago or months ago, so has nothing to do with whether Toyota are supporting the UK, as some have claimed, or not. And I think, as we've made clear here, businesses are not in the habit of supporting a country yes or no, unless there is a financial gain for them. So
this is true. I was kind of worried about Burniston, actually, because nobody had mentioned – Burniston's just outside Derby, of course, for those of you who don't know. Because I hadn't heard much about it. There wasn't really much in the news. And it builds, of course, the Auris and the Avensis, neither of which are, and feel free to correct me, Toyota people, neither of which are particularly hot sellers here in the UK. So I was amazed and pleased to see that they made, 180,396 cars last year from that plant, which is a fair number. And that's it running at full capacity. So I was really chuffed to hear that it was running at full capacity, because I just wasn't sure how successful it was. We hadn't really heard anything about what was happening. But, you know, we'd heard about Honda at Swindon. We'd heard, of course, about Nissan up at Sunderland. So no, really good. And I'm pleased how well they're doing.
Yes.
Just there.
True.
Speaking about that kind of stuff and companies that we don't necessarily hear lots about, Proton. PSA, it seems, are on a bit of a buying spree at the moment. Well, This isn't so much buying spree, but as a partnership. They are Proton and their owners, DRB Hycom, are looking for a strategic partner to buy in with them. Geely, the Chinese automaker, who we regularly forget own Volvo and the London Taxi Company, have pulled out of the running for that. However, PSA have submitted a bid. DRB Hycom, by the way, also don't just build Protons. They also build for Honda, Isuzu, and Suzuki markets in the Far East, which could be a good reason why PSA are looking to hook up so that they can increase their Far Eastern presence without having to ship all the cars from France and having to pay French labor rates and whatever else to get into some of those Far Eastern markets.
Well, apparently when you were there talking just before about capacity and production of factories, reading through some of the information in some of the magazines, they're saying that the Proton factories are not running at capacity at all. So this will be useful. You know, they can take advantage of that spare capacity and obviously cheaper rates, because, you know, with the buy-in of Opel Vauxhall, a lot was said about cost savings without people losing jobs necessarily. So, you know, they've got to find it somewhere. So
It's not something we're going to cover tonight, but it turns out that the certain Opel executives and management are going to be getting some pretty hefty bonuses coming up as a result of that buyout, which I noticed in a story earlier on today. Not saying we're going to talk about it tonight, but there we go. DRB Hycom, by the way, have to choose a partner by mid 2017. So I imagine it'll be a little while before we hear any more on that story.
Yep. Right, I'm going to take the unusual step of defending Uber.
I know they've had a pretty grim. They had a pretty grim week. It was them and Audi. Really.
It's been a pretty horrific month for Uber, really, one way or another. I mean, the pun intended, car crash that has been Uber's PR recently. Yes, exactly. Which was made that bit more worse by the fact that one of their self-driving Volvos was seen plastered over social media and the news on its side with the headlines, Uber crashes or self-driving Uber crashes.
I think it was listed as a driverless car on many, many news reports, which was interesting given there was someone at the wheel.
And the fact that it had nothing to do with the autonomous software. It had to do with those nasty, dangerous, vicious humans behind the wheel of the other car that drove into it.
Yeah.
And that is on the police report. So that's not just conjecture. That's not just a little bit of, oh, maybe it wasn't. No, that's on the police report that the other driver drove into the Volvo.
Uber have been very quiet about it, as is Uber's way, funnily enough, especially when everything else was just so awful for them.
But they have shut down their Arizona testing. And I did see, but I didn't get a chance to check through, but I did see reports that they have started up in California again, which I can't believe, unless they have actually decided to stop doing the silly standoff of paying to do the testing. So there we go. So actually, if we could all report the news properly, that would be only fair and proper, because we're quite happy to put the boot in when people are wrong. So in this instance, it wasn't Uber's fault, and it shouldn't have been reported in the way it was that made it out as though it was.
Absolutely. Yep. Agree totally. A slight change of tack for us, and one that's quite unusual. We don't normally do supercars, but in the week
we don't normally talk about a car unless we have driven it.
This is true, but really, because tonight you might have noticed I've actually had some time to sit and prep, so hence I have many, many nerd numbers at my fingertips.
And it's not the beginning of the month.
And it's not the beginning of the month. And specifically,
some MT figures, so we need some figures to play with.
Yeah, and the pieces of paper I can rustle for Andrew's delight. for the last year, we've had the Bugatti Chiron as the as one of the header images on our website. Basically, I took it off at the weekend, which was when everyone started talking about the Bugatti Chiron. So if you do want to see, by the way, our new, we have new new banner images on every page of the, almost every page of the website. So feel free to go and have a look. And
I particularly like Rear Views.
Rear Views is a cracker. Rear Views was taken specifically for the top of Rear View.
Thank you. It was noted.
Don't say I'm not good to you. But meanwhile, the Bugatti Chiron. You may have watched Top Gear. I'm not going to enter into a debate about Top Gear other than say that I really enjoyed it. But just the numbers in this thing. So 1,500 metric horsepower, 1,600 newton meters of torque, 0 to 60 in 2.5-ish seconds, 0 to 120 in less than 120-ish, because I couldn't be bothered rounding, in under 6.5 seconds, 0 to 190-ish in 13.6 seconds, and a base price of 2.4 million euros. All wrapped up in something which I think is better looking than the Veyron.
I totally agree.
But it is a tour de force of sledgehammer engineering. It is one approach to engineering. It's a perfectly valid approach to engineering. It is quite magnificent that it's been done, but
they've definitely gone down the power route of solving that problem.
It's a small.
Yes. I mean, I know you just said you didn't want to talk about the Top Gear thing so much, but I have to say that I thought that the first Chiron piece was beautifully shot. I thought there was moments in there that you thought that's been shot, okay, full film, but with a photographer's eye, not just a filmmaker's eye. That was, you know, there were certain bits that you go, that was just the perfect shot for a still shot. And it was wonderful. I think the color helped with the sunlight and everything. Don't get me wrong, but they managed to show that car off fantastically well. And I was mightily impressed by the design because I wasn't sure that it was going to be, but I thought it looked much sleeker. These are relative terms, but it looked much sleeker than the old, that old fashioned piece of junk that they've just got rid of. But it does look a wonderful piece of kit. And as you say, the approach is, it's almost pig-headed in its manner to fix it. We have this problem, this is our solution, and this is the solution we will stick with. It's almost of the stick the engine over the back wheels, but we will keep doing this until we make it work really, really well type thing.
Yeah, and I think what's amazing, what you maybe didn't get as much from the film, is just how compact it is. I mean, I've seen it twice now. I saw it at Geneva last year, saw it at Geneva this year. This year it was just the same car, but they had unveiled a new color. So I didn't really fight my way through because I got some nice shots last year and I figured it wasn't any different. But it is so compact. It is like a little, I don't want to say it's like a Beetle, given that Bugatti are owned by Volkswagen, but it is. It's like the most, it's like this brilliantly colored squat scarab Beetle thing. And it's really impressive. The engineering is really impressive. It kind of leaves me cold as a car, and I'd much rather spend my money on a McLaren F1. But hey, so
if
I just
someone
thought
wants
was
to give you
about.
To
yeah,
try.
Someone would like to loan me one to try whatever else for a little while. Then I wouldn't put up too much of a fight. I could cope with that.
Good to hear it.
Yeah. Shall we break for a moment and talk about the audio book that I've been listening to this week in the car?
Yes.
It is a lightweight tome. It is called Street Smart, The Rise of Cities and the Fall of Cars by Samuel I. Schwartz. It's actually a really interesting listen because it is about cars, but it's presented in a perfectly reasonable human way. And it's actually more about traffic and the way that cars and people interact in cities and in closed communities. In actual fact, the best way to make traffic flow well and to make driving reasonable is actually to have as few cars as possible. Now, this sounds like a crazy thing to be talking about on what is essentially a car podcast, but it is a really, really interesting listen. I'm about 5.5 hours into 9 hours of listening right at the moment. And it's really good. It's presented in a nice kind of chatty, self-deprecating style by the chap who's reading it. Sam Schwartz, who wrote it, he was the traffic commissioner in New York in the early 1980s, having been a traffic designer, physicist before that. It's really, really interesting. I know that possibly sounds a bit silly, and it doesn't really sound like a very motoring podcasty thing to be listening to, but I've been thoroughly enjoying it, and I've been learning lots and lots and lots. If I was to go out and buy this from Audible, or from Amazon as an audiobook, it would cost me £17.95, which is quite a lot of money. However, and you'll never guess where I'm going with this if you're a regular listener, or rather Amazon, is offering you this completely free as part of, well, that and any one of their other 200,000 titles available from their store, completely free, with a 30-day trial of their one book monthly membership. During the trial, you'll receive one free monthly credit to be applied to any of the over 200,000 titles in their store, and will receive all the benefits of being a member within those 30 days. You may cancel any time during the trial period, and if you do cancel, the audiobook remains yours to keep. When the 30-day trial period ends, memberships will automatically renew at Audible's full rate of £7.99 a month, which in itself is a huge saving over purchasing a single audiobook. To try Audible for yourself, go to motoringpodcast.com/support and click on the Audible graphic to subscribe via Amazon. So that's what I've been listening to. It is really incredibly interesting.
Yeah, cool. I will add that to my my wish list, and I will put that to one side.
It is good. I was quite surprised. Of course, I've told you about that. Doesn't mean we're not going to ask you to take a few extra moments to tell a friend about Motoring Podcast and Rearview, and to leave a star rating review for us via the podcast playing platform of your choice. The most popular and powerful podcasting platform of all is iTunes, so a 5-star rating on there is hugely influential. But on other podcast apps such as Stitcher, Pocket Cast, Downcast, Overcast, and the like, a rating still means a lot. So thank you in advance. There endeth the advertising spot, Mr. Clues.
Well, on to WRC. Not that there is a race this weekend, but that Mads Østberg, who drives for the drives a Fiesta in the what's the team called? Oh, God, I'm so hopeless at this sometimes. Yes, thank you. He's not going to be taking part at the Corsica Rally because he can't get the tarmac suspension to test. So he said, "Well, there's no point in going because I'm not going to be pushing for the top of the podium because I'll effectively be just testing while I'm there." So I can understand it, and as it is a privateer team, I can understand how money is tight and they do probably have to pick and choose which of their races that they will fully compete on. So if something comes up where it's not going to be as competitive as they could be somewhere else, then I can understand that they take a step back from that.
Excellent.
So the Rally Corsica is 6th to 9th of April, by the way. So
actually, it's the Che Guevara Energy Drink Tour de Corse. So it's nice to see that the sponsorship isn't getting there in WRC.
Yeah, it's not getting in the way.
But Where there is a race this weekend is, of course, Formula E. This Saturday, we'll see the Formula E cavalcade work its way to Mexico. Fan Boost, of course, is already open, and you can log your Fan Boost via the Formula E website. Or by a number of different ways of social media, but I now forget exactly how you do that. So I would go to the Formula E website and do it that way, if I were you. There's a little more Formula E news here as well. First of all, the new layout at Tempelhof Airport for this year's Berlin E-Prix has been announced. I think there's two races in Berlin that weekend. So that's out and about and being released. It is more wiggly, actually, than many Formula E courses. Far more hairpins, far fewer 90 degree bends is what I'm actually trying to say there. So this should be a relatively quick. Quick course, even by Formula E standards. Next up, there's been a bunch of announcements about who's committed to Formula E for the next little while. So up until 2021, there are 9 teams who have committed themselves. Newest of which is DS. So we can look for them to be buying up more of DS Virgin Racing, their current setup. Other teams that have committed until 2021. Are the ABT team, Mahindra, Renault, JLR, BMW, Next EV, Penske, and Venturi, which I almost couldn't read there. And of course, don't forget that next year, because next year's the 2017 season, isn't it? And for the 2018 season, anyway, there is a new chassis and battery coming to Formula E, so there's going to have to be a whole load of development. So that's quite a commitment that they're making just then.
Yeah. Good. Now, who is that? That was from McLaren, wasn't it? Because it's currently from Williams. Or is it the other way around?
No, well, it's a combination right at the minute between McLaren and Williams. It's the new chassis and drivetrain are from Spark Technologies and McLaren Advanced Technologies. The homologations mean the powertrains will be introduced with a new chassis and battery for 2018, which are to be provided by Spark Technologies and McLaren Applied Technologies from 2018 to 2021, when the championship will eliminate its mid-race car swaps for drivers. Quoted directly from Autosport. So naturally, of course, there'll be a link in the show notes.
Mm-hmm.
Which is good.
Yes. Well, that takes us on to our list of the week.
Yes, it's a cracker this week.
Friend of the show, Gavin Enormous Surname Smith, has actually done himself proud here. It's been a few weeks since we've had a list of the week, but he has compiled his list of the 20 most embarrassing car publicity photos. Now, we can take a choice. There is a link in the show notes, and I do encourage you to click this, because some of these need to be seen to be believed. There is the Dayu one, where the Dayu dealership, where they've managed to convince the company MD and after sales manager to get in the boot of one. They didn't look uncomfortable at all.
No. Suzuki Vitara one by the marina.
Well, I mean, I think that's almost illegal, actually. So, the man in those underpants or shorts, I don't know.
I think that all people need to know about this list, really, is that it contains both Ann Widdecombe and hot pants, but thankfully not both at the same time.
Yes. Yes, there are some brilliant ones. The Renault Clio one stands out for me. As Gavin says, I cannot understand what the woman is doing with a burglar's mask on, but I do quite fancy the car.
Now, Michael Owen in 1998 with the liveried Chrysler PT Cruiser. That's all you need to know.
Yeah. So click the link, have a look. Maybe have a sick bucket nearby.
In some cases, very much so. Yes. Sorry. I've just spotted one of the captions for one of the others, which I managed to miss earlier on. However, I shall not explain that, and I shall move directly to the "and finally." So finally, this week, Toyota in California have put up, or will be putting up, from April 3rd to May the 28th, 37 billboards around Los Angeles and San Francisco, which are advertising the, of course, the Mirai, hydrogen-powered Mirai. So what? I hear you cry. Why are you talking about billboards in the "and finally," Alan?
So you are talking about billboards in the "and finally," Alan.
Yeah, I put Andrew to sleep. So what's impressive about these is that the vinyl on the billboards is coated with titanium dioxide, which reacts with the oxygen in the air to remove some of those nitrogen dioxide emissions that we've been
reacts with
about.
The nitrogen dioxide to remove. Not the oxygen. Titanium doesn't react dioxide. To the oxygen.
Titanium dioxide coated vinyl reacts with oxygen to remove nitrates. My apologies.
Okay.
I can't read my handwriting from the air.
With all light it needs, and all it needs, wind and humidity.
Yes. All it needs is light, wind, and humidity. The 25,000 square foot of titanium dioxide. Making sure he gets the right element in there, should remove the nitrogen oxide emissions from 5,285 vehicles. Nobody says what type of vehicles. Over the course of these particular billboards being in place. So it's
is that
a fantastic
per billboard.
No, that's in total.
All of them. Right. Okay.
Which is quite impressive. A fantastic marketing stunt. Even if it doesn't, it's a fantastic marketing stunt. Yeah, well done, Toyota.
No, but I think it is quite clever the way that it shows that stuff that we wouldn't expect to be doing a second job could be doing a second job. So maybe there's further applications for that sort of idea. You know, things like generating electricity in a different way, and you know, every little helps, as it were.
Yes.
But no, it's good spot that, Alan.
Yeah, right.
I'm impressed with that, actually.
I thought that was quite a fun one, actually. Just for the end there.
We like clever tech.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Even when it doesn't involve that much tech, ultimately, it's quick.
That's what made it clever.
Yes. Okay, it's one of those evenings tonight, guys. there's a couple of quick parish notes before we sum up. First up, no rear view this week.
Or next week.
Oh, well, let's see about next week. I'll see what I can do about next
week.
Okay,
but there has been...
It'll be a hesitant stuff
work,
to really next week.
There has been work and calendar issues have
yes.
combined and smashed together to make the perfect storm of no one to talk to.
Which is such a pity because thank you, everyone, for your feedback on last week's with Jim Holder. And if you haven't listened to the one with Jim Holder, or the one before that with Ashley Winston, or the one before that, I can't remember who it was with off the top of my head, or any of the other 20-odd that are up there, please do go and have a listen. They are fantastic. And I can say that because I've had nothing to do with any of them. So, yeah, cracking. Thank you, Andrew. Thank you, guests on Rear View. You, Motoring Podcast, on Twitter and Instagram, on Facebook, and on the contact page of motoringpodcast.com, the hub of all our activities. Remember, our Audible offer, available at motoringpodcast.com/support. And please, please, leave a review and rating on iTunes or however your podcast app lets you do such a thing. As I say every single week, it really, really does matter. Andrew. What's the best way to get in touch with you and find out your wise 140 characters?
Really wise. yes, you've hinted heavily there. Twitter is the best way. If you search for Crack Windscreen, you will find me there. And Alan, if people would like to get in touch with you personally and tell you how wonderful next week's show is, what would be the best way?
Or how wonderful it's going to be. Twitter again, where it's at AJP Bradley. That's BRADLEY. Thank you, everyone, by the way, for your support on Instagram this last couple of weeks. I have really been barraging it, and lots of people have been liking lots of stuff and leaving those comments. So thank you. Other than that, I will be back next week. But until then, I've been Alan Bradley.
I've been Andrew Clues.
And safe motoring.